Chapter 5. The Fixer and the Saboteur. There are many constructs that have attempted to explain why human beings are drawn to each other, especially when considering the need to mate or find a partner. Like attracts like as one. It means that you may be attracted to others based on beliefs similar to yours, political, theological, cultural, etc. There is also the law of attraction, which states that opposites are attracted to each other. There are those that believe hidden deep within us is a hardwired evolutionary need to propagate our species, a core neurological function of love and desire that emanates from the oldest part of the brainstem. There are others who believe that you long for someone to help you resolve unfinished childhood relational issues, conflicts, or even trauma. This means you choose someone based on the psychological need to work out your issues stemming from your primary caregiver. People are often attracted to one another to fulfill a role they expect, assume, or hope the other person will meet. I believe that all of these theories may bear some truth. But there's also the notion that we all long or hope for someone who will understand and sign off on our personal narrative, our story. Yes, it's true. We basically need to find someone who will support our hopes and dreams. And in moments of stress and anxiety, possibly sign off on our bullshit as well. Some people may actually become aggressive or violent when someone doesn't agree or buy into their story. Everyone is seeking to find acceptance and connection with others, so putting up with someone else's bullshit may just be part of the trade-off. We may hope to find someone that will help soften the blow of our hammer of shame, but also likely is that we may choose an accomplice, someone that will pick up the hammer and beat the living hell out of us with it. It depends on what we teach those we bring into our inner circle. This is one of the dirty little secrets about relationships. We teach people how to treat us. Shame can be an exhausting process where you berate yourself with negative and fear-based beliefs. So why not have a co-conspirator who will gladly pick up the hammer and remind you of all the problems and mistakes that you have made? You may even need to create a whole new series of problems or betrayals so that this new person has direct experience of the shame-based beliefs that haunt you. Here is how you end up attracting someone who will support your belief systems, even the negatively biased ones. When we are meeting new people, a common dynamic is not to disclose too much of life's low moments. For this to occur, evolution has taught us, through trial and error, to have a poker face, so we don't show our whole hand right out of the gate. We don't want to scare everyone away from the start. Many people who struggle with an addiction to a drug or behavior of choice believe that if you knew all the stuff about them, there is no way that you would want to be with them. Being vulnerable in the early encounters doesn't seem to be a viable option for many people. We don't want others to see our junk drawer of the mind, the place we stuff all those pesky shame and fear-based beliefs, where all those reminders of the mistakes we have made are kept. The trouble happens when one looks through their own personal junk drawer to find something practical, like a AAA battery or that little screwdriver used to fix your glasses. But you end up exposing some of your shame, fear, and unworthiness that inhabits it. This leads to further contrition and reinforcement of negative self-beliefs. My life is a mess. Look at all this nasty shit I've crammed into my junk drawer. Running under the surface is a narrative. If I believe that I need to be punished for the way I am, I could easily find someone who will honor that agreement. Sound crazy? It's not. People are attracted to one another because one person's belief system complements the other, as if one narrative was written for the other. This is why an abuser may be attracted to someone who has been abused. The abuser can instinctively spot a person who may have been abused or has negative and shame-based beliefs. Maybe they learn that hurting or punishing other people is an acceptable way to behave in a relationship, or even a way to maintain a sense of control over their life. If dad treated mom this way, or mom and dad treated me this way, this must be how things work, even though I do not like it. This is a form of learned helplessness. This is also an example of finding comfort in the known, the learned, or the expected. This is how shame and fear-based narratives get passed on from one generation to the next, becoming intergenerational. These are learned behaviors, just like bias, prejudice, or bigotry. Self-punishment and shame-based beliefs are passed down and assimilated one generation to the next. It's not uncommon to find that your current relationship has turned out somewhat like your past relationships. You may have changed houses, schools, towns, wardrobes, jobs, friends, partners, even your name. But if you have not changed your personal narrative, there is a good chance the past will repeat itself. When you forego rewriting your personal story and live in the past, you tend to create the same relationships over and over again. With each new encounter, you may think you are developing a new narrative within yourself. I will not get involved with someone like I did before. These attempts are cursed from the start. Until you take the time and the energy to rewrite your story, otherwise you attract the same person over and over again. Your schemas take over and will play the hits of your old playlist like it's on repeat or loop. The person you choose may have a different job, wear different clothes, have a different circle of friends, come from a different town, but the chances you repeat the past are high. Regardless of the packaging, you will end up in the same relational dynamic because that is what you know, and that's what's become comfortable. Until you change your story, the song will remain the same. But why does this happen? Believing that another person can change your narrative or how you feel about yourself is like believing that a magic wand can cure your ills or change your life. All change results from the internal rewriting of your personal story. Change is an inside job. The idea that there is someone out there that will complete you or make you whole is a fairy tale. A prince or princess charming will not come and fix everything with a magic kiss or wake you from your slumber of powerlessness and victim stance. It is wishful thinking that you can find someone who will help you unpack or reorganize your junk drawer. But alas, there are people in this world who believe they can clean out your junk drawer, even fix you. And this person is called the fixer. They are delusional in their story of being able to change others. The fixer is also looking for someone to help, someone who has a problem to fix. The catch is that both the person they want to fix, who I call the saboteur, sometimes also called the addict, and the fixer choreograph a dance or interplay. Like two sides of a flipping coin, they spin and spin. Sometimes their roles become intertwined or even switch. The fixer enters into an agreement with the saboteur, which sounds something like this. You, the fixer, can live and share space with me as long as you agree that your role is to only try to fix me. If you want to change me, you must leave or I will isolate from you. The key to this arrangement is that the fixer only tries to fix the saboteur, though deep within the schemas of their neural network, they believe that it might just be possible. That is why they keep trying, believing their love will turn the saboteur's zombie-like brain human again. The fixer wonders if they'll have a symbolic kiss to awaken them from their slumber. The fixer plays the traditional role of a codependent in the relationship, whereas the saboteur plays the traditional role of the obsessive compulsive addict. This forms the basis of a push-me-pull-you relational dynamic. But because their roles are harnessed together, they spin out of control, like a flipping coin. The saboteur and the fixer have blind spots to the truth. They badly want to believe that someone else can change or help them. Both parties find comfort in denial, maintaining the status quo. The fixer and the saboteur have insecure, avoidant, or anxious attachment styles, which perpetuate their journey to find that special someone who will meet their needs. The fixer often has anxious attachment styles, preoccupied with the relationship, and they tend to worry about their partner's capacity to love them back. The saboteur commonly has an avoidant attachment style, fearing the intimacy and vulnerability will lead to the demise of their independence, so they stay clear of fully bonding and connecting with their partner. The fixer and the saboteur could change this dysfunctional dynamic if they parted with a person who has a secure attachment style. Someone with secure attachment is comfortable with intimacy and has a warm and caring nature about them. They also have good boundaries, which are consistent with someone who knows how to meet their own needs while differentiating themselves from others. Secure people are comfortable being vulnerable and are not looking for someone to fix, especially someone to fix them. By playing the righteous role of savior, the fixer focuses on the saboteur's problems and pain, while putting their own self-care second to that of the saboteur. Here, the fixer embraces the role of the caretaker. The fixer becomes obsessed with sacrificing their own well-being to take care of the saboteur. Both the saboteur and the fixer suffer from the same addictive narrative, but play different roles. The fixer may join in with the saboteur and act out in the very behavior they detest as a sad surrender to something that they realize they have no control over. A true dependent fixer wants to take on the struggles, problems, and pain of the saboteur because the fixer feels secure in their need to save and rescue others. Playing the role of the fixer in life is just another way of self-medicating. The fixer becomes the victim of their own self-judgment, criticizing themselves for staying in a situation that they have no control over. The fixer's critical voice tells them, "How can you be so stupid to stay with someone who lies and cheats on you? You must be a bad person and deserve someone like this." Their shame-based beliefs sound something like, "If I were only a better person and could do a better job of taking care of them," the saboteur, "they wouldn't do the things they do." A fixer believes that if they could take better care of the saboteur, if they could just do more, then the saboteur would not act out with their drug or behavior of choice. Fixers believe if they just worked harder or do more things for the saboteur, they will not hurt or betray them. But sometimes keeping the peace becomes a reprieve from the constant rejection from the saboteur. So they pretend to ignore the behaviors, the lies, all the signs. They find themselves emotionally drained, wishing the saboteur would pull them closer. But the saboteur doesn't, rebuffing the fixer. Driven by exhaustion and a feeling of being out of control, the fixer forms the bias that their needs will never be met. They end up keeping score of the saboteur's problems and mistakes, becoming angry, frustrated, and a professional stonewaller. The fixer finds themselves triggered by everyday activities, which spark a previous memory of rejection that reinforces the negative bias towards the saboteur. These memories create an emotional response of anxiety, anger, or fear. The fixer then seeks closeness with their partner to comfort their own fears. And when those needs are not met, the fixer's anxiety and insecurity increase, resulting in a more heightened need to connect with the partner. Only this time, the emotional response has escalated, and the fixer lashes out, threatens or shames their partner, sabotaging the connection they so desperately seek. This is an example how roles can switch back and forth between these dynamic forces. This odd arrangement prevents both parties from getting their needs met. The saboteur and the fixer enable each other to play specific roles in their relationship. The fixer believes they are holding things together. Without the fixer, the relationship or family would fall apart. Fixers use much of their energy to maintain these irrational beliefs. The payoff is that the fixer is getting to play the role of the savior, martyr, and sacrificial lamb. The saboteur's avoidance mechanisms work in contrast to the fixer's control mechanisms. The saboteur is triggered by daily normal activities. This too provokes anxiety and stress. They may seek connection with the fixer, who responds negatively by pushing the saboteur away. Thus, the saboteur's insecurities increase, which activates their avoidance mechanisms, which could, in turn, create distance, reinforcing the belief that being vulnerable and intimate result in pain and anxiety. Avoidance can also generate periods of disassociation that further push away the fixer, widening the distance between them. The fixer and the saboteur are masterful enablers. They overlook behaviors in each other that they would not tolerate in any other person. The fixer makes excuses for their inability to maintain any healthy boundaries. The fixer often enables the very beliefs and behaviors that they loathe. Frozen in place, the fixer takes the role of the tormented hero in a dysfunctional family system. A fixer stays in dysfunctional relationships because this enables them to blame their feelings and fears on others, thus proclaiming the role of the victim. They tell anyone that will listen, "I am not getting what I want in life," because the saboteur behaves in such awful ways. Whether we are playing the part of the fixer or the saboteur, there is comfort in the role of a martyr. Martyrs are victims of their own unwillingness to take accountability for their misery. And it is important to remember that these roles are not exclusive within a partnership or family system. The roles can switch at any time. When there is a payoff for a behavior, it is human nature to resist change. It is as simple as ringing the bell and a piece of food drops through a hole. This is identical to any other conditioned response. The payoff for hearing the bell was a food pellet for Pavlov's dogs. You become conditioned to respond even if the food, the payoff, doesn't show up. The fixer can easily continue to live in the throes of self-pity, but when they release themselves from the narrative that they must save other people, they are capable of healthy self-care. The fixer may even judge and criticize the saboteur for not taking responsibility, but then refuse to stop being a caretaker or cleaning up after them. It becomes evident that the fixer does not actually want the saboteur to change. If they did, who would the fixer have to complain about? And where would they find purpose? The saboteur could not complain about the fixer always trying to change them. Unrealistic expectations plague both parties and perpetuate the payoff to victimization and martyrdom. The fixer may become obsessed with trying to keep the relationship or family stable as the saboteur spins out of control. The fixer becomes deeply enmeshed in their mental anguish, self-shackled in misery of the victim stance, and blaming current problems on past belief systems. Byron Katie said, "A thought is harmless unless we believe it. It's not our thoughts, but our attachment to our thoughts that cause suffering. Attaching to a thought means believing that it is true without inquiry. A belief is a thought that we've been attaching to, often for years." This explains how an attachment to a belief is just another piece in the puzzle. Rewriting your narrative requires taking responsibility for creating your belief system. It will help facilitate the important step of taking accountability. Dragging the past into the present is one hallmark of the victim stance and the bias of self-sabotage. Creating a new narrative by living in the present is representative of your ability to bond and connect with others in healthy and caring ways. You need not to solve others' problems to be okay with who you are. This new personal story embraces the power of empathy and compassion, where being wholehearted is fundamental to building intimate relationships. And intimate relationships are vital to creating emotional and psychological stability, along with a sense of wellness. It is very difficult to embrace personal responsibility when you endorse a belief that someone else will change, fix, or make your problems go away. Erroneously, you have searched outside yourself for the power that is seated within you. There is acceptance in the ability to let life be. Stephen Levine, the father of Noah Levine, who created Refuge Recovery, said, "Detachment means letting go, and non-attachment simply means letting be." There will be instances in your life when you will need to detach and let go of something or someone. And there'll be other times when you'll just need to let that someone or something be, without attachment. Understanding that your personal self-care needs require that you differentiate between these different relational dynamics. Know when you need to eliminate a belief, a story, or a person from your life, and know when you need to just let those things be, as they are, differentiating from them so they don't affect how you think, feel, and act. To adopt a healthy and responsible mindset, seek change within yourself, without expecting the outside world to change. Acceptance is a life skill where you learn to adapt your narrative to the world around you. Adaptation is the ability to perceive and process the world as it is, not as you wish it to be. This practice becomes rooted in the capacity to live a life of honesty and accountability, which is essential for the ability to be honest with yourself, while having awareness of your bias, blind spots, and prejudice.